The apartment had been searched. Vera knew it before she crossed the threshold. It was not a matter of deduction so much as instinct, the stale, metallic tang of the air, the prickling heat at the nape of her neck as she lifted her key from her bag. The front door was unlocked, exactly as she had left it, but the resistance was different. She pushed inside and closed the door softly behind her, the click of the latch too loud in the silence. She stood in the hallway and listened. The printer below was quiet, which was unusual. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the press normally started at 4, grinding through its midnight-to-midnight cycle with a mechanical hunger that Vera had come to depend on. Its absence was the first sign. The second was the smell-wet ink undercut by something sharper, something chemical, like the solvent they used at the ministry to clean the type rollers. She took off her coat and hung it on the hook by the door, the way she always did, because routine was a kind of prayer. Then she walked through the apartment slowly, opening drawers, checking rooms, telling herself it was paranoia, telling herself that people searched apartments all the time, that the new authorities had lists and keys and very little patience for the old customs of locked doors. But the searching had a precision to it that frightened her. This was not a random rummaging. This was a hunt. The bedroom was the first room they had entered. The drawer of her dresser stood open, its contents spilled across the floor in a careful fan. Vera knelt and began to replace the items she recognized: a tin of buttons, the ledger where she recorded her mother's prescriptions, a bundle of letters tied with string. Her fingers paused on a photograph lying face down on the dresser. She turned it over. It was the one of her mother standing in front of the printer's shop, taken in 1964. She had moved it from the wall weeks ago, unable to bear the sight of her mother's smile, and now she simply set it back among the other papers. She picked it up and set it face up. Her mother's smile looked different now, tilted slightly to the left, as though the photographer had been standing at an angle she hadn't accounted for. Or perhaps it was only the light in the room, which had shifted during the hours she had been gone. The kitchen was next. The cupboard above the sink was open. She checked the jars, the flour, the sugar, the dried beans her mother hoarded like a woman preparing for a siege that everyone else had forgotten was coming. Everything was in its place. Whoever had searched here had been thorough but selective. They had opened the cupboard but not emptied it. They were looking for something specific, or they were looking for something that would tell them where to look next. The living room was worse. Her desk had been overturned. The blotter was on the floor, the paperweight a smooth river stone she had picked up from the vault of a one spring morning lying on its side. The pages of her translations were scattered across the rug, each one face up, each one examined. She recognized the poems, the ones she had done for Jiri, the innocuous Czech verses about rivers and harvests, and the old songs her grandmother had sung. She had never understood why they felt dangerous. Now, staring at them spread out on the floor like fallen leaves, she wondered if she had always understood and simply refused to name it. On top of the desk, where the surface had been wiped clean of dust, someone had left a mark. A fingerprint or the impression of a gloved hand, pale against the dark wood. Vera reached out and touched it. The varnish was cool beneath her fingertip. She went to the bedroom again and knelt by the floor. She pressed along the seam she had loosened weeks ago, her thumb finding the groove by memory, the way she found the light switch in a dark room. The floorboard lifted easily, the hinge of it worn smooth from the times she had checked, from the times she had simply needed to know that it was still there. The cavity was empty. Not the satchel she had buried it deep, packed it with newspaper and dried flowers, and the small weighted stone she kept in her pocket when she walked near the river, but the cavity itself had been disturbed. The edges of the hole were scraped, the plaster around it cracked from prying. They had looked. They had found the space. They had not found what was in it, or they had found it and taken it, or they had simply wanted her to know that they had looked. Vera sat on the floor with her back against the bed and stared at the hole. It was roughly the size of a shoebox, no more, and now it gaped open like a mouth that had forgotten how to speak. She reached in and felt along the bottom. Nothing. She ran her fingers along the sides. Nothing. The cavity was clean. She closed the floorboard and pressed it back into place. The seam was visible now, a thin dark line against the lighter wood, a scar she could not hide. The telephone in the kitchen rang. Vera froze. The landline had been removed from their floor 6 months ago, and the only remaining phone was upstairs, in some stranger's apartment, and it rang sometimes in the evenings, sometimes in the night, and she had learned to ignore it the way you learn to ignore the sound of boots on the street below. But this was different. This was the phone that had rung at 7 in the morning, the phone that her mother had insisted on keeping, the phone that someone upstairs had bypassed the cut for reasons nobody could explain. It rang again and again, 3 times, then silence. Vera stood up, her knees ached. She walked to the kitchen and picked up the receiver. "Hello?" Silence, then a click, then the line went dead. She replaced the receiver carefully, the way you replace a loaded weapon. Her thumb throbbed faintly, the scab from the bread knife catching on the plastic as she set it down. She pressed the tender skin with her other hand and felt the heat radiating from it, the inflammation that would not go away, the wound that would not heal. Outside, the street lamp flickered. It always flickered at 6:47 in the evening, a timing so precise that Vera had once suspected the electricity board had built it in deliberately, as though the city needed reminders that not everything was functioning correctly. Today, the flicker felt like a signal. She walked to the window and looked down at Karlova Ulus. The street was empty, as it always was in the late afternoon, the cobblestones gleaming with the damp that November brought without warning. But across the street, in the doorway of the bakery, a man stood with his hands in his pockets, watching the building. He was wearing a dark coat, the kind of coat that ministry officials wore when they wanted to look like civilians. His face was turned toward her window. Vera stepped back from the glass. Her heart was beating fast, and she hated it, hated the body's betrayal, the way it responded to danger before the mind had time to process it. She pressed her palm flat against the wall beside the window, feeling the plaster cool and solid beneath her skin. The wall had been there since the 1880s, when the building had been constructed, and it had held up through wars and revolutions and the slow decay of everything it was meant to protect. It was still holding. She walked to the desk and began to gather the pages from the floor. She stacked them neatly, aligned the edges, and placed them in the drawer of her writing desk. She closed the drawer and locked it with the small key she kept on a chain around her neck. The key was brass, warm from her skin, and it fit the lock perfectly, the way all good locks do when they are not being tested by force. Then she went to the kitchen and made tea. The kettle clicked off at the right moment, the automatic shutoff she had installed months ago and never used until now. She poured the water over the leaves and watched them unfurl, dark curls opening in the hot water like hands unclenching. She carried the cup to the window and looked out again. The man in the doorway was gone. Vera set the cup on the sill and rested her forehead against the glass. The apartment smelled of wet ink and stale tobacco, and something knew something metallic and cold, the smell of a room that had been violated and did not yet know how to forgive itself. She closed her eyes and listened to the silence, which was no longer empty but full, full of footsteps that had passed through these rooms, full of voices that had spoken in tones she could not hear, but could imagine, full of the weight of paper and the lightness of betrayal. She stayed there for a long time, watching the street, waiting for the next sound, the next movement, the next word that would tell her what had happened and what would happen next. The city exhaled. The printer below remained silent, and beneath the floorboards in the dark, the satchel waited. Vera no longer felt certain that waiting was the same thing as hiding. The tea went cold on the windowsill. She did not drink it. Across the street, the bakery door opened and a woman stepped out, carrying a loaf of bread wrapped in brown paper. She walked quickly, head down, shoulders hunched against the cold. She did not look at the building. She did not look at the window. She walked past the doorway where the man had been standing and disappeared into the fog. Vera watched her go. Then she turned away from the window and walked to the bedroom, where she sat on the edge of the bed and waited for her mother to come home. The kettle had clicked off, the radiator hissed, the printer below had stopped. And beneath the floorboards in the dark, the satchel waited. But the floorboard bore a fresh scar, a thin dark line against the lighter wood, and Vera wondered what waited beneath it, narrow leaf, perhaps, or ruin. She closed her eyes. She counted the ticks of the wall clock. She counted them backward, from 60 to 1, and then started again, because counting forward was too much like counting time, and time was something she could no longer afford to measure. The street lamp flickered at 6:47. The fog thickened. Somewhere in the building, a door closed. Vera Novikova sat on the edge of her bed in the gathering dark, listening to the silence with the same careful attention she once gave to poems, searching for the word that changes everything. The telegram arrived at noon, delivered by a boy in a coat too thin for November who stood in the stairwell and refused to meet her eyes. Vera took it from his outstretched hand, felt the stiff cream envelope against her palm, and walked up the three flights without opening it. The boy's shoes were white canvas, scuffed at the toes, and she noticed this because noticing was what she did when she needed time. By the time she reached their floor, the apartment door was already ajar, a sliver of daylight from the kitchen window cutting across the hallway, and she knew, before she pushed it wider, that her mother had been here. Elena Novikova stood at the kitchen table with her back to the door, shoulders hunched the way they always did when she was trying to make herself smaller. The telegram sat on the table beside a plate of sliced bread, the crusts arranged neatly along one edge. She had not touched it. Not yet. Or perhaps she had and had put it back, unable to commit to whatever the words inside demanded. "Mama," Vera said. Elena turned. Her face was pale, the blue of her eyes sharp against the gray pallor, and for a moment she looked like a woman who had just heard a verdict. Then she smiled, the quick, tight smile she reserved for bad news, and said, "It is from Jiri, or someone pretending to be him." Vera set the telegram on the table. She did not pick it up. She looked at the bread, at the knife beside it, at her mother's hands, knuckles swollen, nails bitten to the quick. "What does it say?" "It says he is in Vienna. It says he is well. It says," Alina's voice broke, she cleared her throat. "It says he wanted me to tell you not to come looking for him, that it is dangerous." The radiator hissed. Through the kitchen window, Vera could see the roof of the printer's shop, the corrugated iron gleaming dull gray in the overcast light. Somewhere below, a press was running 4 o'clock, always 4 o'clock, the afternoon grind of it vibrating up through the floorboards. "Dangerous," Vera repeated. The word felt strange in her mouth, like something she was testing for ripeness. "Who sent this?" "I don't know," the boy wouldn't speak. He looked at his shoes the entire time, as if the ground might swallow him. Elena picked up the telegram and unfolded it with careful, trembling fingers. The paper crackled. "They are watching the post, Vera. Everyone knows this now. The letters, the parcels, the phone calls, there is no privacy anymore, not even in your own home." Vera moved to the window. She pressed her forehead against the glass, the familiar cold seeping through her skin. Below, the street was empty except for a woman in a dark coat walking slowly toward the tram stop, her head down, her steps measured. Prague had learned to walk quietly in recent weeks. People moved through the streets like they were apologizing for taking up space. "They searched our apartment," Vera said. "She didn't turn around. She didn't need to. Her mother would hear what she wasn't saying." Elena was silent for a long moment. Then, "I know." "You know?" "I heard them, Vera, last night. Three men, heavy boots. They went through your room. I sat at the table and I listened to them open drawers and pull out papers and throw things on the floor. I counted the footsteps, 6 of them, maybe 7. They moved fast, like men who wanted to finish quickly and go home." Vera closed her eyes. She could picture it. The apartment torn apart, the dresser overturned, the photograph face down on the floor, the floorboards exposed where they'd pried at the edges. She had checked the cavity herself after her return from the ministry empty, intact, the satchel still hidden beneath the loose board. They hadn't found it. Or they had, and it had been empty when they looked. Or they simply hadn't known to look beneath the floor. "Why didn't you call me?" Vera asked. "Call? With what phone?" Elena's voice rose, sharp with anger. "The phone was ripped from the wall 6 months ago, Vera. Do you think I could dial a number and tell you that men were breaking into our home? I sat there. I waited. When they left, I locked the door and I prayed." Vera turned from the window. Her mother was standing by the table, the telegram still in her hands, her shoulders shaking. Not crying. Never crying. Elena Novikova had survived 2 wars, a revolution, a husband who disappeared into a labor camp and never came back, and she had done all of it without making a sound. But now, with the tanks in the streets and men in dark coats tearing through apartments, her composure was cracking like thin ice. "They're looking for you," Elena said. "I know they are. Your Western friends, this American, this journalist, he has put a target on your back, and I am afraid, Vera. I am afraid for you and I am afraid for myself, and I don't know what to do." Vera walked to the table. She placed her hand on her mother's arm. Elena flinched, then went very still. Do not say that. Do not promise me what you can't control. Alina pulled away. She set the telegram down and picked up a slice of bread, tearing it in half with her teeth. They will come for you eventually. Colonel Hanselhe was in here yesterday, before the men who searched the apartment. He knocked politely, like a neighbor borrowing sugar, and I let him in because what else was I supposed to do? Don't say that. Don't promise me what you can't control. Alina pulled away. She set the telegram down and picked up a slice of bread, tearing it in half with her teeth. They will come for you eventually. Colonel Hanselhe was in here yesterday, before the men who searched the apartment. He knocked politely, like a neighbor borrowing sugar, and I let him in because what else was I supposed to do? Vera felt the blood drain from her face. Hans. He asked about you. He asked where you worked, what you translated, whether you had any relations abroad. I told him you were alone. I told him you had no friends except that American and that he had abandoned you. Alina's voice trembled. I lied, Vera. I lied to a colonel of the ministry. Do you understand what I did? You protected me. I bought you time. Alina's eyes were wet now, though she refused to let the tears fall. But time runs out. It always runs out. And when it does, I want you to be ready. Ready for what? For the moment when you have to choose. Alina set the bread down and walked to the cupboard, pulling out a tin of biscuits she kept for company visitors who never came. She placed it on the table beside the telegram. When they come for the manuscript or whatever it is you are hiding, because I know you are hiding something, Vera, I know it, and I have said nothing because it is not mine to say when they come for it, you must decide. Do you burn it? Do you give it to them? Or do you run? Vera stared at the tin. The label was faded, the picture of roses on the front peeling at the corners. She thought of the cavity beneath the floorboard, the shoebox-sized darkness where the satchel waited. She thought of the translation she had done in the ministry basement, line by careful line, unaware that each word was a coordinate, each phrase a signal. She thought of Jiri, in Vienna or wherever he was, sending telegrams through channels she didn't understand, protecting her from a distance. I don't know, she said. Then you are already in trouble, Alina replied. She picked up the telegram and folded it neatly, creasing the edges with her thumbnail. Knowledge is power, Vera. Ignorance is survival. You have always chosen knowledge. Now you must choose something else. The clock on the wall struck 4, though the sun still hung heavy in the sky. Vera didn't understand why she thought of it, why the memory of that exact hour, that exact light, surfaced unbidden. Perhaps because it was one of the few constants left in a world that had stopped making sense. A low, metallic groan vibrated through the floorboards, rising from the depths of the printing press below. The apartment held its breath. Alina went to the bedroom and closed the door. Vera stood alone in the kitchen, the telegram and the bread and the tin of roses on the table before her, and she listened to the silence with the same stillness she reserved for poetry, waiting for the word that changes everything. Outside, a car engine started. It idled for a moment, then drove away. Vera did not look out the window. She had learned that lesson too. Looking was an invitation. That means you're already in trouble, Alina said, her voice low. She took the telegram from Vera's hand, folding it with precise, deliberate movements until the creases were sharp against her thumbnail. Stop digging, Vera. You believe that if you scrape hard enough, you'll uncover the truth, but the truth is a luxury that gets people killed. Get out. Go to Jiri in Vienna. Walk away. She folded it the way Alina had folded it, creased the edges with her thumbnail, and put it in her coat pocket. Then she walked to the bedroom door and listened. Her mother was humming a Czech folk song, old and slow, the kind that sounded like morning even when the melody was bright. Vera stood there for a long time, her hand on the painted wood, and then she went back to the kitchen and sat at the table and waited for whatever came next. The kettle clicked off somewhere in the kitchen, though she hadn't turned it on. The printer below had stopped. The city exhaled, and beneath the floorboards in the dark, the satchel waited.